We're happy to make podcasts available for selected EdWebinars for your listening pleasure. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.
Welcome, everyone. It's so wonderful to see a large audience from across the country and some international participants as well. My name is Christine Fox, and I am the Deputy Executive Director at CEDA, the State EdTech Directors Association, and we are excited to share our new resource from Print to Digital Guide to Quality Instructional Materials. With me today, I also have two state leaders, Alan Griffin from the Utah State Office of Education, as well as Barbara Suits, the OER Program Manager for Washington State's Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction. And we're happy to have them here. So you'll hear about CEDA, about this tool, and you'll also hear and see the state perspective as well. So for our agenda today, I will be providing some general background information about quality instruction materials and related to CEDA's work. We will hear the state perspective from both Utah and Washington State. And then I will provide an overview of the actual guide to quality instructional materials resource, and then we'll have a question and answer. So those of you not familiar, CEDA is a 15-year-old nonprofit. We do support state and territory digital learning leaders from, we have representatives from all 50 states and multiple territories. And our focus are advocacy and policy around digital learning. We also provide professional learning opportunities for state leaders, and we participate in public-private partnerships, and our partners collaborate, including on resources such as the one that we're going to share today. And then we also do quite a bit of research and reporting. All of CEDA's resources are on our website, CEDA.org, and they are available to the public at no charge. But just a little background of where we've come. CEDA has a track record of multiple resources. Most recently, we've been very focused on digital instruction materials. And through that, we have an online portal we refer to as DMAPS, where you can see policies and practices related to instructional materials acquisition. In the fall of 2015, we launched the Navigating the Digital Shift report on policies and practices related to digital instructional materials. And then we have a series of policy briefs. In addition, to support this work, because as everyone knows, we need the broadband capacity and device access to be able to access digital instructional materials. Most recently, we published the Broadband Imperative 2 in September 2016, and that has capacity targets for schools and districts, as well as recommendations around in and out of school access, Wi-Fi, and state leadership around broadband implementation. So From Print to Digital Guide to Quality Instructional Materials has been a work in progress for over 6 months. CEDA has provided this work via the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and we'd like to thank them for supporting this research and development. Quite honestly, this work came out of a grassroots effort from CEDA members. Many digital learning leaders were getting more involved in the instructional materials process via their state initiatives, and they wanted a place to be able to go to share and learn about best practices related to digital instructional materials. So this is truly a guide. The tool itself does not endorse any particular set of materials. The focus is planning, evaluating the quality, connecting on national as well as state level examples of how you may choose to vet and curate instructional materials at the state, district, and school level. So this is really a best practices, and you can use and repurpose the tool to make it best and most useful for you. We did have a task force of state and district leaders, as well as private sector partners. The state leaders included participants from digital learning, as well as instructional material, chief academic officers, staff members, and even folks from the IT side of things. We had two in-person discussions, and then we also participated online at some points weekly and biweekly. CETA itself conducted some independent research. And then we had partnerships with the chief state school officers, the State Instructional Materials Review Association, as well as CAST in the AIM Center, the Accessible Educational Materials Center. So provided that lens of accessibility. I just want to give a special thank you to the task force members. There was a large group of over 25, and then specifically the task force chairs, Kurt Bernhardt from Oklahoma and Barbara Suits, who will be presenting shortly from Washington Department of Public Instruction. In addition, a co-author of this tool, in addition to myself, is Rachel Jones, educational consultant. So one major area that we spent quite a bit of time talking about as far as in considering was what is quality. And having said that, when you have a group of over 25 leaders and you begin to wordsmith one sentence, it becomes quite challenging. But we have provided a definition here in the tool itself. We also reference multiple other definitions from other national organizations and several districts. So we have defined what we believe quality is and means. And when we talk about quality, we're talking about all instructional materials, regardless of licensing, regardless of format. We do, and this might be small on your screen, but we do provide an overview of the topics and subtopics of the full site as an image. So if you're considering sharing this resource within your state, district, or schools, you kind of have a snapshot of what those topics and subtopics are within the site. You can see it's fairly comprehensive. There is a lot of information. We tried to keep the site to have mostly bullets and succinct content so that it was most useful and readable to the user. And one thing that we advocate through this resource is the idea of state leadership. We know that actually most states are local control and they cannot mandate specific resources or instructional materials at the school or district level. However, many states, regardless of their guidance or policies around instructional materials, have shown some vision and leadership. They're providing guidance and professional learning opportunities so that their districts and schools can all be on the same page. And CETA is advocating for the fact of state leadership, regardless of your adoption policies. As I mentioned, we will have continued sustained support via our online community, Essential Elements for Digital Content. We encourage you to join this, to share with others. It is open to the public. We will be organizing a bi-weekly topics, and this will be a facilitated community so that we can continue this discussion, stay focused, and share the best use of your time so that you can connect with other leaders interested in selecting quality materials. So now we will hear from two state perspectives. First, we'll hear from Alan Griffin in Utah. And Alan is also the lead, the president of the State Instructional Materials Review Association, SIMRA. They are a CETA affiliate, and we have had a very cooperative partnership with that group through this process that has been enhanced. Before participating as the curriculum content specialist and the Utah State Office of Education. He's been on various executive boards. He also presents at multiple conferences. And for 11 years, he worked in technology support at the district level. So I'm going to turn it over to Alan so you can learn more about the way that materials are selected and provided in Utah.
I told Mildred that I was going to the store to get a gallon of milk. We're out. She said,
"Okay, but while you're there, if they have avocados, get 6.
"Okay," I said. I came back in half an hour and Mildred said,
"Well, did you get everything?"
"You betcha. It's all on the table," I said. "There's the 6 gallons of milk."
The Instructional Materials Review Process, SIMRA and Utah's Perspectives.
Like Floyd, we sometimes get very confused about what it is we're supposed to get. Selecting the very best curriculum resources can be a very confusing and laborious process. This is the very best curriculum This presentation will showcase two organizations, CIMRA and the Instructional Materials Review Center at the Utah State Board of Education, that will illustrate and give examples of effective review processes for print as well as digital instructional materials. Every education agency, be it state or local, has established standards for curriculum. Hence, every agency must also have a process for reviewing instructional materials to evaluate how they best match up with those standards. There are many other reasons to review the materials, including finding those that are most reasonable in cost, supporting local control initiatives, protecting students from harmful materials, and saving valuable time for instruction. May I introduce you to the State Instructional Materials Review Association, a group of 21 states that are involved in the process of evaluating instructional materials. While most of these states have formal review processes at the state level, all are basically local control states, meaning that ultimate selection of the materials is made by local education agencies. The evaluations conducted produce recommended listings of resources for districts and schools. Most states offer the listings as a service that LEAs may choose from, but are not mandated to do so. As an affiliate of CETA, CIMRA is actively involved in contributing and helping all LEAs, regardless of size, to understand the tenets involved in the selection of instructional materials. Members of CIMRA have collaborated to simplify the review process into three fundamental elements. First, aligning content to core standards. Second, making materials accessible to all students. And third, evaluating resources for physical characteristics and pedagogical design. There are three areas, these three areas, that is, are further broken down into specifics for the review process. The emphasis on content strongly reflects the necessity of correlating curriculum with standards and objectives for the course. It also emphasizes challenging and engaging tasks for learners that are clearly explained. Accessibility parameters require materials to be free of bias, advertising, and political interests, available and adaptable to meet the needs of all students, and meet federal and state laws and acceptable technical standards so that installation and use of the materials is error-free and convenient. Pedagogical concerns highlight student interactivity considerations, instructional support and references, and assessment and intervention strategies. Spaces available in each section for reviewer narratives and scoring of the items on the review form can total as many as 100 points. Numerous rubrics and evaluation guides from various states and organizations are available on the CIMRA website to assist in evaluation, allowing for individualized selection and customization favoring local control. Begun in 1947 as the National Association of State Textbook Administrators, the organization has evolved to accommodate the review of digital materials, as evidenced by the change in its name to State Instructional Materials Review Association. The organization offers many services that are freely available to publishers, developers, educational patrons, and to the public at large, including collected resources to assist in the review process, schedule statewide reviews according to subject areas, and detailed descriptions of state review processes. CIMRA has a web presence via a website, CIMRA.us, a Facebook page listed as the State Instructional Materials Review Association, and a Twitter feed listed as #CIMRAGroup. Utah's Instructional Materials Review has been approved by the Utah State Board of Education as an asset to local LEAs to assist them in the selection of quality curriculum resources. Reviews of all subject areas are conducted annually in Utah, and recommended materials are put on a 5-year contract guaranteeing pricing and availability for educators, and Corinda Online for reviews for publishers. Those wishing to participate in the review process must follow an enumerated process that promotes fairness and efficiency. Reviews of the recommended materials are available to all from the website highlighted on this slide. A key component of the review process is the careful correlation of submitted materials with core standards and objectives. Utah law requires publishers to hire third parties to clearly show how alignment of materials matches the core. Reviewers are armed with rubrics that assist them in checking for alignment, accessibility, and pedagogy, including checking for instances of bias or sensitivity, to guard Utah students against potentially harmful or unlawful curriculum. Rating designations are assigned to materials to assist teachers in determining how they may be best used in the classroom. The review process is a great aid in avoiding poor quality or unsuitable materials, as well as selecting materials that are high quality resources. Utah is heavily involved in the use of open education resources, making specific and dedicated efforts to produce, locate, and review materials that are openly licensed and/or freely available. A recent event, the Utah OER Collective gathered educators from all over the state to mine 154 openly licensed or freely available resources, which now will be carefully vetted and made available to the public on the Utah Education Network website. A system of cataloging and sharing these resources has also been proposed using Twitter. Widespread use of this system will quickly produce an index list of resources. You can see that this particular hashtag list refers to the OER and also to the subject area, even down to the grade level. Finally, another parable. Floyd and Mildred were driving along one day with Mildred at the wheel when Floyd was startled to see Mildred go right through an intersection when the traffic light was clearly red. He figured she just wasn't paying attention for a minute and didn't say anything when she came to another intersection and went right through another red light. Luckily, they didn't hit anything, and Floyd, knowing that women are kind of sensitive about criticism, still remained quiet. They continued on when they came to an intersection that was quite busy. Floyd was aghast when they once again went through a red light, narrowly missing a pickup truck full of heavy equipment. Floyd had to say something this time, so he turned to Mildred and shouted, "Mildred, do you know that you just went through three red lights?" Mildred looked over at him, her eyes big as silver dollars, and said, "Was I driving?" So the big question when it comes to reviewing instructional materials is, who is driving? Who will be doing the review? What tools will they use? Simra and Sita are both committed to providing useful resources to assist all educational patrons, whether from state agencies or from local LEAs, as they evaluate curriculum materials for the nation's children. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan. And as folks can see, Alan's information is posted here, and I appreciate the parables. As in education, we like to be able to relate to things. As he mentioned, and I opened with, Simra and Sita have been working very closely together, and Utah has shown quite a bit of leadership at the state level on instructional materials review process. So I want to thank him for that content, and I would encourage folks to post questions in the chat. We do have some colleagues that are monitoring those questions so we can address the questions at the end of the session. And so thank you very much, Alan. And now I'd like to introduce Barbara Suits. Barbara is the Open Educational Resources Program Manager in Washington State for their Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. I believe that is a unique position based on other positions that we're aware of across the country. And I will say, I will give thanks again. She has shown great leadership, not only for her state colleagues, but also within CETA, providing numerous resources and feedback, from sharing links to helping to edit and She has been instrumental in the process and development of this, along with the folks from CIMRA. So she organizes the OER initiative in Washington. And Barbara will be the first to tell you that quality supersedes licensing in all aspects. And she has helped us to keep that mantra. So she organizes awareness campaign, organizes the vetting and posting of specific instructional materials in Washington State. And she works closely with the digital learning leader there as well, Dennis Small. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Barbara Suits.
Thanks, Christine. Hi, everybody. It's great to be here today. Thanks for taking the time to join us this afternoon. It's really wonderful to see the amount of interest in this area. I think a lot of that can actually be chalked up to the new research that's coming up, pointing to the fact that instructional materials can have as big of an impact on student learning as areas that we traditionally think about, like teacher quality and reduced class time. Because of that, it is really helpful to provide guidance to the field in the selection of instructional material. And I also think it's important to encourage exploration of OER options that can provide equitable access to quality instructional materials. So a little bit of an acronym alert. I know we've been throwing OER around. Let me just clarify and make sure we're all on the same page that OER stands for Open Educational Resources. And these resources either reside in the public domain or they've been released under an open license that permits their free use and repurposing. So I'm going to share just a little bit of my time here to talk about Washington's work with evaluating OER and really how that work triggered a bigger discussion on the guidance that we give to districts regarding instructional materials in general. So for my colleagues stuck in the snow, grab some coffee or hot chocolate and settle in for a few minutes, and we'll move on. So we all know that today's instructional materials have moved far beyond the textbook. The new landscape includes resources of all different grain sizes, from individual units and lessons and units, and all the way to comprehensive core instructional material. These resources are delivered via print, digital, blended formats, and they can carry different types of licenses with different levels of permitted use. With Washington's adoption of new learning standards in math and English language arts and science, a new C3 framework for social studies, districts are hungry for instructional materials that meet these new learning standards. Also, we're seeing really high interest in OER and lots of increased development in OER, not just at the supplemental, but at the full course level as well. The bottom line is that I got a little nasty gram about my bandwidth, so I'm going to turn off my camera for now. The bottom line is that a lot of districts and individual educators are out there looking for materials. And make no mistake, there are a lot of them out there. And as you know, this can lead to a tremendous amount of confusion. Because of the changing instructional materials ecosystem, really. OSPI, that's the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, that's our Washington State Department of Education. We worked with the State School Directors Association here in Washington to create an updated model policy for the selection and adoption of instructional materials. The updated policy recognizes OER as a viable option for district consideration and points out that delivery platform and license really shouldn't change the quality evaluation process. It also clarifies that review methodology and the roles that need to be involved differ with different types of instructional material. We all know that when you review a supplemental resource, when you're looking at a physics lab simulation, is going to be vastly different than when you review and adopt core instructional material for something like a year-long algebra course. Just to give you a little bit of background on OER interest in Washington, in 2012, the state legislation passed a bill that directed OSPI to create a collection of openly licensed courseware and to conduct an awareness campaign to inform school districts about these resources. In our statewide survey that we issued to identify perceived challenges to implementing OER, questions about quality really surfaced frequently. They bubbled to the top of the list. Basically, how do you know the resources you find are actually aligned to standards and are effective teaching tools? At OSPI, we decided to address this quality concern by convening teachers from across the state to review OER using widely recognized instruments, the same as you would review any traditional instructional material. To add a bit of state context, we recognize that there are many types of instructional materials out there that districts are using and exploring. OER is just one piece of that puzzle, albeit I think it's an important one for districts to consider. Look, at the end of the day, the criteria that we use to judge quality of materials needs to be the same, regardless of whether that material is print or digital, open or all rights reserved copyright. Quality is quality, and we want to put the best materials we can in front of our kids. So although this review focuses on OER, the tools used and the lessons learned are applicable to any instructional materials. Little disclaimer here, like many of your own states, Washington is fiercely local controlled, so we don't do state-level adoptions. OSPI does not require the use of any particular instructional materials by districts or schools. Because of that, it's really important to point out that the intent is not to do a ranking and rating of materials, but really to provide a consumer report style guide for districts. They can understand some of their options with regard to existing OER. They can certainly discover developers that are working in the OER space. And most importantly, they can become informed consumers of instructional materials. Currently, we have 24 full course math curricula and 60 ELA unit reviews posted on our website. And I certainly encourage you to take a look, and I'll make sure that that gets posted in the chat window here in just a second if it's not already there. We actually begin our review of K-2 ELA core instructional material on Monday, and we hope to add those results to the site by late April. In addition to the rubric scores, perhaps the most useful feature of our OER review is actually the reviewers' comments that speak in depth as to the particular strengths and challenges and provide actionable advice on how to increase alignment. And since these are open resources, you can actually take action on that actionable feedback and adapt to your heart's content. So I wanted to share just a few best practices and lessons learned during our OER review process and work with our district stakeholders. Some of these are more applicable to the selection and review of core instructional materials, but some guidance applied to supplemental resources too. First, you need to take a look at the material through several different lenses: administrative leadership, content experts like teachers, teacher librarians, and curriculum directors, and technology specialists should all be at the table. They all have really important guidance regarding what it takes for the effective selection, review, and implementation of instructional materials. Next, take advantage of existing reviews to help winnow down the selection for your instructional materials review committees. EdReports is a nonprofit organization that extensively reviews core instructional material in math and ELA. Other states like Louisiana also post their reviews online. I know that other states are doing this work, and I'm leaving some out, and I apologize in advance, but the slide was only so big. We feel comfortable recommending these sites to our teachers since they have a very transparent review process, and they use rubrics that are the same or at least very similar to the ones that we recommend to our districts. So speaking of rubrics, there's some really good ones available that we recommend. The advantage of using existing review tools is that it better positions us to share the results. If you're going to share information between districts or states, you have to speak a common language and have a shared definition of quality. The Instructional Materials Evaluation Tool, or the IMET, from Student Achievement Partners is a resource used to evaluate a comprehensive textbook or series of textbooks. The EQUIP rubric from Achieve takes a look at lesson and unit level resources. There's a version for math, ELA, and science. This last year, we worked with social studies teachers across the state to create a social studies EQUIP adaptation for Washington learning standards. The Achieve OER rubrics are good for evaluating resources that are smaller in grain size than units or lessons. They're especially good with digital content. They're good for any content area, and it doesn't necessarily need to be OER. In addition to the content evaluation tools, we also developed some guiding questions for different stakeholders in the review process. These address technical and administrative considerations. So one thing that became incredibly clear as we spoke with educators from across the state is how many different places they're finding resources. I think it's important to keep in mind that no matter how many libraries or repositories or curated sites that we create, there will always be new or updated materials showing up on teacher radar from so many different sources. So it's certainly my hope that this toolkit serves to provide some useful resources and guidance that'll help define best practices when it comes to considering instructional materials, both for supplemental use by individual teachers and as core instructional materials for a district. To that end, here's my new mantra that I will share with anyone that can't run away fast enough. It doesn't make a catchy acronym, but here it is, and I know you can read it, but I'm going to say it out loud anyway because I think it's that important. Basically, know your need, search critically, review with recognized rubrics for the evaluation of instructional materials, and understand your level of permitted use. As much as we can instill these ideas in educators, the better armed they're going to be able to face that sea of options out there when looking at instructional materials. To wrap up really quickly, I did want to let you know that we're trying something new and we're pulling together educational leaders from across the state to attend instructional materials adoption leadership trainings. I am well aware that we really need to come up with a new name for that. It's certainly the hope that we can share these best practices with them and learn from their expertise as well. Washington will continue to openly share any resources that evolve with our instructional materials efforts, and I really look forward to hearing from and seeing resources produced by other states regarding their work in this area as well. With that, I'm going to leave you with my contact information. I will certainly be online to answer any questions later, but I will go ahead and throw it back to Christine. Thank you guys all very much.
Thank you so much, Barbara. And again, thank you to your dedication to this process. I know we've all learned a lot from Washington and the work that you've led. And the mantra is something that we're hoping to share on as well. And just so Alan and Barbara can pair for this, I know one question was about pre-K and preschool level content. So I'll let you ponder that. As I go and dig into the site, I can tell the users that this site particularly was more focused on K to 12. However, the beauty of an online tool is that we can add content for the duration as we develop this. And so if you have suggestions, we are open to that. So now I'm going to walk through the site. And so I'm going to be sharing my desktop and I will not be able to see the chat. So I will depend on my colleagues. As we view the site itself. So bringing you to the homepage, and I'm going to try to talk slowly to allow for the delay. But this is a landing page, qualitycontent.ceda.org. We are excited to share this tool with all of you. We encourage you to leverage the content here to reuse and repurpose it. Apart from a few images, it is all openly licensed, and we want you to make this your own. We'd also love feedback from the users on how they've been able to leverage this content, how you've been able to share it. And we look forward to you sharing in the community how that may be happening in your state. or school or district. So just a quick general information, we do have in about this project section, which kind of teaches you why and how. I've had many folks reach out to me to ask, you know, what content are you endorsing? And this is not about that. We don't actually list any particular content. This is about how to review content and curate content. So we want to be really clear about that. We also provide here resources for you on being able to share this work. So a more generic version of today's slide deck is available. So if you want to share about this tool with your colleagues, you are encouraged to do so. Then digging in, you can see that we have six major topics here. And within each topic, we have particular subtopics. So there's a lot of content as I scroll through. And what we did do is provide an overview that shows the key areas within the topics and subtopics. And this is really a site map, but of course today we don't have the time to be able to click on every single subtopic and example. So we wanted you to be aware of everything that's included, and this particular chart can be downloaded from the site as well. Having said that, you can see that planning is one of the largest topics, and we know that as both Alan and Barbara mentioned, first figuring out how you're going to review and planning for that, excuse me, is most critical. We do have a robust section on quality materials, both the CETA information as well as definitions from a variety of other groups on what is quality. Excuse me. Then we have considerations for digital. So we know that print versus digital, they're not one in the same. And as you're looking at digital versions of instructional materials, there are multiple considerations there. So we do have unique characteristics and some examples from North Carolina of how they've talked about shifting to digital. Within the state policies and practices page, we include policy recommendations. So what should your state be thinking about regardless of their adoption requirements? And some considerations for state selection process. And these could really be adapted to the district selection process as well. It was critical to the team that was helping to build that we focus on educational goals, that first and foremost, excuse me, you must have the goals in mind, your standards in place, and then you choose your materials accordingly. Next, in the budget and funding section, we do have background on total cost of ownership, as well as how to transform your budgeting. So as we know, potentially shifting to digital, you do have considerations around bandwidth, accessibility at home, both at home and at school, to digital content, and device access. So you'll notice here on the bottom right, as I scroll, that there are multiple resources. We use boxes as well as direct links. And so this will take you out to other organizations and tools that have been developed. Our goal here wasn't to completely reinvent the wheel, but to leverage resources that are already acceptable and have been vetted by others. Another very robust section of the site is the selection section. Within that, we do have examples, detailed examples from multiple states. If you don't see your state here and your state does have a state level review process, we are also happy to add you to that. So keep in touch. But you can see, I'm just going to show Alabama. There's quite a bit of content on what content areas they review, how they select their team, how their team is trained, quick tips, the tools the state uses, the platform that they're sharing the content, as well as whether or not they compensate their reviewers. We have this same buckets for each of the states listed here. And for a couple of districts, I know there are quite a few teachers and district leaders on the call, and we are also happy to add other district examples as well. If you're looking for just a quick snapshot of what states are doing, we have the state examples chart. So this is same information, much more abbreviated, all in one place, quick snapshot of content areas and what different states are doing, including hyperlinks. You do have the ability to print a page on this site. And then we're also trying to offer as much of the content as possible via download as well. So back to the selection section, both Alan and Barbara mentioned the importance of a review team and who's on the review team. So we did spend quite a bit of time and discussion on who these folks should be and who you should consider to be part of your review team. And then we have some tips from Achieve the Core as well on how to review and select your team. The select materials actually has four separate sub-bullets. And you can see here one big topic of consideration that we spent quite a bit of time talking about as well was the importance of core versus supplemental. So are these full course materials? Are they supplemental? What are the differences in how to review those, that content? And we have some resources here for you. We did post in the chat, Barbara had several of these on her slide, and then we have some sample rubrics. So always nice to share what's already out there versus reinventing the wheel. Then there are tools that are available. Some of these are more specific to content as far as the digital resources and tools, and others are focused on the materials alignment and content itself. For example, Alan mentioned CIMRA, and so they have the 10 common criteria for evaluation of instructional materials. So this isn't specifically a rubric, but critical elements. And then for repositories, we have provided multiple repositories that are available. Ed Reports was mentioned earlier. Benetech hosts Bookshare, which is accessible library for print disabilities. And then multiple other groups. On the implementation side of things, I do want to highlight here on the right for the background of each topic, we've included action steps. And within those action steps, these are just kind of the quick, like, what should you be doing? What should you be thinking about? Just to give you a quick kind of guide to that. And then in multiple topics, we also on the background page or other pages, we have key questions. And so those are questions that you can adapt and reuse as best makes sense for you. So in addition to the repositories that we shared in the selection section, we also wanted you to be aware of the state repositories. So multiple states are hosting content. And CETA, I mentioned earlier, has the DMAPS website. This site includes a map, and you can sort. 24 states have some type of digital learning repository. Most of those are open and available. A few of them do require state login. And then we've started to gather some videos. So if you're presenting on this topic and you want to be able to show, whether it's a policymaker or, you know, convincing your colleagues at a school or district level, the importance of quality materials, as well as the value of shifting to digital, there is a small repository here of video, and we will be adding to that as well. And then finally, Barbara mentioned open educational resources, and so CETA has dedicated a section to that content, including three case studies on two of the states here, as well as New York. And many of you may have heard of Engage New York. And that is where you can kind of really dig deep all the way down to the classroom level with interviews of teachers. And then last but not least, a resource tool within this site is quite robust. So if you're interested specifically in just talking about budgets, you can apply the filter and all of the resources that post are specific to budget. You can also select multiple topics and you can decide you really only want to review websites. And if you apply the filter, you will come up with that specific data set. And so we tried to tag all of the resources as best possible so they're easy for you to use. And these resources are also embedded throughout the site and multiple pages potentially. But if you just are looking for a specific resource or a need to know more about a specific topic, then you can just choose the topic area. You do have to clear out if you want to change topics or formats. And then we started to include here, you can see it says guide to quality instructional materials resource. Then this is either a presentation or a Word doc of key questions or considerations related to a topic that we've developed through this particular work. Okay, so hopefully everyone has the URL qualitycontent.ceta.org. I'm going to stop sharing my screen. And then ask the EdWeb team to pull up the slide deck. Great. So it looks like on my end that the screen share worked well today. So I'm just going to click through. I did create a slide deck just in case we had some bandwidth issues, but I'm happy to say these slides are included in the overview slide, as well as on that's posted on the website, as well as in this full deck that you can access. So if you want to be able to kind of walk through the site with leaders in your this school district or state, you are welcome to do so. So I am sure there are multiple questions in the chat. And right now I'm going to just lead off with the question that I mentioned earlier. So if Barbara and Alan want to go ahead and turn their mics back on. We do have about 10 minutes to answer questions, as well as if your camera is working well, and if it's a challenge, Barbara, we're okay with that too.
I turned it back on. We'll see how long it lasts.
Okay, great. So do you have, do you want to comment a little bit on the preschool side of things from Washington?
No, it's a good question. It's not an area that, I've been focused on with my work with the K-12 OER project, but I will say that there are a couple of places that I would certainly suggest looking for pre-K OER. There are several big repositories of instructional material that are in the open space. So OER Commons is one, and I will type that in the chat window here in just a second. Kariki is another one. Both of those sites have filters for educational level, and you can filter specifically by pre-K. I know that Engage New York actually does go down to the pre-K level as well. So there are some resources out there at that level. I would say that there's definitely far fewer right now, at least in the open space.
Alan, did you want to comment on Utah and the preschool side?
Yeah. Not just OER and the resources that Barbara gave are certainly good resources for that. But we review materials for what we call early childhood, which basically takes in pre-K up to kindergarten and first and second grade as well. And our reviews, as most of the similar states are posted online. And you could go in and look for those. They're under, under our website, under the elementary, early childhood area. And so, we have been reviewing those for some time, and we'll continue to do so.
Great. And I am going to ask both of you a question of, I see, and you've shared a bit about how you provide lead the vetting process at the state level. Do your states provide, and I think, Barbara, you hinted at something you're starting to do in Washington, how do you provide professional learning or guidance to the districts on their walking through this process of selection?
Yeah, and that is certainly something that we're trying to deal with. We don't have the capacity at the state level to go, you know, to every individual district and kind of lead them through a process for the selection and adoption of instructional materials. We're certainly working on providing guidance to districts in the terms of an instructional material toolkit, similar to what SEED is working on. In fact, a lot of the resources are going to be duplicated between the two, but we'll have some that are more specific just for Washington schools. And we are trying out pulling together just a cadre of teacher leaders from across the state who do go through kind of a training process so that they in turn can be recognized as having gone through this process and can work with districts in their region to kind of help walk them through too as well. So it's a kind of a train the trainer model, I suppose, for instructional materials adoption leadership.
Great. And that sounds like Indiana has what they call their rock stars of curation. And so they do some training at the state level and then work with schools and district leaders to review content as well. And it also is kind of a similar process. So that's where I think we all can learn from each other. How about in Utah, Alan, as far as training the districts?
Well, in our review process, we pull in people from all the districts in the state at the recommendation of our specialists here in the state office. And we actually keep their names in a database from year to year so that we can draw on people who have experience. But when they come in, we pull them in here to our office and have them gather together in groups and look at the materials together as a group. But we do provide some initial training there, and our specialists, math specialists, science specialists, they go out into the districts as well all the time, and they're very concerned about making sure that everybody understands the core standards and objectives and help them to learn how to recognize quality materials that match up to those core standards and objectives. So it's a two-pronged effort, I guess. The specialists go out and do some things out in the districts, but when they come in here for review, we offer some training as to the review process as well to make sure that that they're on board and know exactly how to match things up with the standards.
Great, thank you. I did see a question about, I think it was a district with no budget. So they don't have any funds to spend on content. Regardless of licensing, open doesn't necessarily mean free, especially when it's digital. It's tough to be able to access that content if you don't have the devices and infrastructure in place. So most of the links that we have shared, and I believe that both groups have shared, give you access to a variety of resources at no cost, but then you do have to have the ability for the teachers and students to access those. So I know in the transformative budget section of the site, we do talk about shifting budgets. And I don't know, maybe Alan, if you want to comment a little bit on how folks have potentially shifted their budget for digital and or change their budget philosophies to get maybe free, which may be open resources as well.
Yeah. In our state, as well as many of the similar states, budgets that were allocated for textbooks have been, I guess, the budget has been expanded to include not only open education or instructional materials that might be digital, but also have been expanded to include even the hardware to obtain devices so that this curriculum can be used. So it's kind of a fine line between the instructional materials and the devices these days. Some of them are really tied to the devices. Now, obviously, we want to have materials that can apply to as many different kinds of devices as possible. But I think that was the right move to say, let's open this up and have the devices be accessed as part of the curriculum materials budget.
Great. And Barbara, I'll ask you to take the last question from Giancarlo. And this is relating to the transition to to digital. And do you think that it presents an opportunity to move the needle on transitioning to more active learning pedagogies? How do you feel quality digital materials may promote this?
Oh, you're going to give me the digital question, huh? I think that might be a better question for you at CETA that's dealing more sure. with the transition to digital. So I'm gonna throw that one back to you, if I may.
Sure, no worries. So I would say on the CETA side and multiple organizations on the national level, when we talk about digital and shifting to digital, one of the primary reasons is for that ability to personalize. The fact that digital content, especially when it's dynamic, interactive content, gives both the teacher and students the ability to customize that content. It has more of the bells and whistles of interactivity from being able to highlight and word banks, but also engage in simulations to interact with the content, be able to access videos, which may be appropriate for particular students, and then the ability to provide real-time assessments, especially those formative assessments, can inform the teacher very quickly on her particular class or group, and then the ability to adapt that content or the instruction based on those child's needs. So at CETA and as I mentioned with many groups, the ability to access the digital is real-time, it's engaging, and it is the reality of college and careers. So there aren't many careers these days where you're not engaging with digital materials in different ways. And the personalization also allows students to create content in a different way than they may with analog tools.
We hope you enjoyed this EdWeb podcast. If you'd like to receive a CE certificate, you must watch the video recording and take the corresponding CE quiz. Recordings and quizzes can be found in the EdWebinar archives. Please visit home.edweb.net/podcasts for more information.